Hi, everybody. Good evening. Welcome to the broadcast. It is March 18th, 2020. Tonight's, of course, a very relevant topic for what we're all going through right now. In fact, what most people in the world are going through and are thinking about all throughout the day. And we're going to talk tonight about how to talk to your children when the world feels unsafe. What I think is really cool about tonight's topic is there's so many lessons that we can gather from the work that we do at Evoke with working with children who are struggling with mental health and addiction issues. And the first thing I want to say to kind of introduce our first little exercise I'm going to do tonight, which for those of you who are new, we do not normally do exercises on these. This is mostly just psychoeducation, is I'm going to go through a breathing exercise. I'm going to do something to downregulate the nervous system, because like I said, chronic low levels of stress can have negative impacts on our body, especially when we don't have an outlet, some kind of action plan to deal with it. So we're going to do a little bit of a breathing exercise. But the first principle that I wanted to share with you all tonight, to borrow from what we've learned in doing what we do at Evoke, is this. I always say to a family, to parents, when they have a child that's struggling with a mental illness or with an addiction, I always say, even if things were working okay for you in your life previously, we're going to ask you to do some things like go to an Al-Anon meeting or a CODA meeting or therapy or practice meditation or mindfulness. And part of what they say is, I've never needed to do that in the past, because they see the problem is the child, right? This new stressor of theirs. But here's the point. When we have new stressors introduced to us, we're going to have to try something different. And so your relationship with the news media, your relationship with social media, your relationship or lack thereof with mindfulness or meditation, your relationship with therapy and self-help books and podcasts might have been different before this pandemic. And so this pandemic is going to ask of everybody to try to do some things to gather some resources that previous to this they didn't need. We weren't all as anxious a month or two or three ago as we all are now because of this pandemic, this virus introduced into our life. So that's kind of my front-loading idea, is what has worked for us in times before this may not work for us now. We may need to gather new resources and sources of strength to deal with things. And I think that's one of the biggest lessons that we can borrow from the work that we do with families and children who are struggling here at Evoke. So with that said, I'm going to ask you to get comfortable. I'm going to encourage you to lower your gaze or close your eyes if that helps. And then I'm going to talk you through a couple of moments of breathing. I like to picture the image of a pitcher of water. Imagine a pitcher of water. When we fill it up, it fills up from the bottom first up to the top. And then when we pour out the water, it empties from the top. So I'm just going to encourage you to breathe, to pay attention to it. I'm going to ask you to breathe through your nose. One of the ways that tricks the nervous system or kind of hacks the nervous system is when we're at a state of calm and we breathe through our nose, that's a signal to the nervous system that we're not under duress or under stress. So try to breathe through your nose, in and out through your nose, and breathe slowly. So I'm going to kind of guide you through this. If you get distracted, you can just notice it and then see if you come back to what I'm saying. So, if you can hear any background sounds, it's okay. You don't have to tune them out. You can just notice them. And I'm not going to ask you to change your breath to begin with. First, I'm just going to ask you to notice it. I'm going to invite you to breathe through your nose and just notice your breath, the feeling of your lungs filling up and emptying. Sometimes when we pay attention to our breath, it does tend to slow, but you don't have to do that just yet. Just pay attention to your breath. Now I'm going to ask you to picture in your mind a pitcher of water, filling up from the bottom. And emptying from the top. Filling up from the bottom and emptying from the top. Now, if you can, I want you to breathe in on a four count and breathe out on a four count. So it's like this. Breathe in, counting to four, and breathe out. Breathe in, count to four, now breathe out. Breathe in, count to four. Breathe out, count to four. You don't have to do it at the same time that I'm doing it. Now, I just want you to take a moment and notice if you're holding any tension in your body. Are your legs relaxed? Your feet? Are you holding anything in your hips? Now, scanning up through your belly and your lower back. Are you holding anything in your shoulder blades? You can move or release it if you find yourself holding it there or anywhere. Are you holding it in your shoulders or your neck? Are you holding anything in your jaw? Anything in your face, your expression, your eyes, your brow? And now I just want you to take four more breaths, count to four with the inhale and the exhale. Thank you for doing that with me, and thank you for joining us here tonight. Like I said, for those of you, we've had some people join since we began. We don't typically start with an exercise, but one of the principles of tonight's broadcast is to, as adults, remember to be responsible for our own peace of mind and serenity. One of the first lessons from grief counseling that I think about so often is this idea that when there's a loss in a family, one of the reasons why an outside counselor can be so helpful is because everybody in the family is experiencing grief and they're experiencing it in their own way. So it's hard for family members to be there for each other because everybody has a different way of grieving. And I think it's the same with this kind of stress that we're all under. And our children are inadequate, incapable containers for our stress and anxiety. So it's why I started off with the idea that even if you don't have a practice of meditation, it might be a time that you give it a try. There are apps online, there are things that you can do, but most importantly, if there's nothing else you hear tonight, it's to know that children are inadequate at holding space for us and making us feel safe. And we can sometimes inadvertently ask that of them, right? We can vent, we can joke. We had an earthquake here in Utah today. It wasn't a devastating earthquake, but it was what woke us all up at 7:10 a.m. this morning. It was a 5.7, not too far from where I live. And it was disconcerting enough for all of us. And so the children and my wife and I, we all got together, and my 17-year-old son said something right away. He said, "Look, I'm struggling enough already with anxiety. Please don't have anybody make any jokes about the end of the world because it's not good for my anxiety." Which then my wife said, "I'm so glad you told me," because that was going to be our inclination, actually. We had already done it when we were by ourselves. So it's important to realize that some of the things that we may do or may not do, we might have to adjust those at a moment like this when our children, when everybody's feeling so much stress, so much anxiety, so much fear. Like I said to begin with, what you were doing before may not be enough. So you can say, like I said, "I don't meditate and I've been fine." You can say, "I don't go to therapy." You can say, "I don't listen to self-help podcasts or attend webinars like this." But that might not work in situations like this. The situation compels us, right? It asks something of us that our day-to-day life a few weeks ago was not asking from us. Adopting practices to lower the nervous system regulation. One of the things that doctors will tell you is to avoid heavy drinking. While it might help temporarily, and it does, it often leaves us depleted of the chemicals in our brains and our bodies that give us a sense of well-being. So even if you use alcohol to relax at night, you might consider stopping, or any other recreational drugs. And you may talk to a doctor about something prescribed at this time. Again, this is a unique situation and unique times, and so we kind of have to shift our thinking. Like I mentioned already, and we practiced just a little bit of a simple breathing and body scan meditation, a meditation might be an important practice for you to practice throughout the day. I shared last night that the day before I had to have several moments where I was practicing breathing because the newness of it all, the stress of it all that I was dealing with was definitely affecting my blood pressure. It was affecting my reaction, my triggers from others. I talked last night about this idea that I came up with of social distancing from the news or social media. The idea here is to be very intentional about your consumption of news and social media. I talked last night about, for some of us, that's been a distraction. It might not be a distraction right now. For some of us, we become so addicted to information because we have this experience in our lives with the more information we have, the more we can solve a problem, right? Us worriers, us anxious people have evidence and experience that if we put ourselves to worrying, sometimes it's believed, sometimes it's real, then we can prevent future pain and suffering. And that might not work for us right now because this is something that's fundamentally out of our control. I talked last night about relating to our children who struggle with anxiety or addiction. This is in part what they're medicating for, is that feeling that all of us are feeling, at least at some low level. And also, I want to talk about being intentional about your your consumption of social media and news in front of the children. That's very important. Conversations that you're having with other adults, if you have two adults in the home, might not be suited for children, right? Recognize triggers. This came from last night's question, actually, and I know you're on here tonight because I saw you. Somebody mentioned that having a child home because school let out early because of the virus, and the child might be somebody who presents certain triggers to several members of the family. Recognize what your triggers are and be intentional with your exposure and your coping, right? You might have to do something different. Most of us codependents, right? Most of us anxious people, and it doesn't affect our life in a dramatically negative way all the time, but in times like this, it's going to have a different kind of effect. Most of us try to manage the people around us, right? Part of our solution to our triggers at times in all relationships is getting the other person to change. And if this relates to our children, they're under a great deal of duress also. And really technically have fewer mental resources to deal with them than we do because they don't have a prefrontal cortex, right? They don't have as much of a rational thought process as we do. So it's important to recognize your triggers, to own them as triggers for you, and then to be as intentional as possible about managing your exposure to the triggers. You know, these last two ideas are really go hand in hand, which are under stress, recognize that we all regress, right? Anybody can be reduced, virtually anybody, can be reduced to a psychotic level of functioning. Anxiety is much less than that. It's more neurotic than psychotic. But just to illustrate the point, anybody through enough torture and stress can be reduced to psychotic levels of functioning, can be reduced to primitive levels of functioning, right? Old levels of functioning. Some of you know that. I love this. This was in a book I read a couple of weeks ago and did one a broadcast on by Harriet Lerner, where she talks about how her son, I think he was a sophomore in college, coming home, he said on the way home, in fact, he has a best-selling novel out right now, as a side note, but when he was a sophomore in college and he was driving home, he said to his father, who had picked him up at the airport, he said, "Dad, I can just feel the layers of maturity peeling off me the closer and closer I get to home." What an insightful awareness. Sometimes you have the experience of being around your family of origin or watching your spouse be around their family of origin, and you watch either yourself, if it's your family, or your spouse, if it's their family, you watch them start to act in ways that are much less mature than their typical functioning day to day. That's regression. That's how contexts regress us. We're all going to have some of that now. And so be kind to yourself. And part of kindness can be born out of just understanding that that's the nature of human behavior and human functioning. It's true of all of us, even the most enlightened among us. As Ram Dass said, if you think you're enlightened, try spending a week around your family. I love this quote. This is actually something I saw. I can't find the original author, but I put it in my new book. It says, "The first thing you should know about me is that I am not you. A lot more will make sense after that." You know, what the stress of this pandemic is doing for all of us is it's just turning the volume up on everything, right? This is a quote I've shared on broadcast previously when talking about parents with children who are struggling with mental illness. But it's really important that we understand that to connect to somebody, we have to see and understand that there's somebody other than us. And it's so easy to kind of slip into a shaming style of communication when somebody else is responding to stress differently than we are. It's so easy to do that. Part of therapy, part of my training as a therapist, which really, for me specifically, comes from my training as a client, right? I was educated, of course, in the field, but my real learning came from being a client. Part of the education and the idea of being a therapist is to learn to see somebody. When I'm talking to clients, I'm looking for understanding. Where does it make sense? And almost always it does, almost always. I say so often in therapy, that makes sense. I get it. Right? Even if it seems crazy or looks primitive or sounds crazy, it makes sense in some context. That's really what good therapy is understanding the context where whatever behavior you're exhibiting, understanding how it makes sense in that context. So in regard to your children specifically, the first thing is to listen. You know, the title of the broadcast tonight is How to Talk to Your Children. But I cannot overstate that it starts with listening. Parents on our program talk about all the time about how they want their children to listen to them. They want to be able to impart their wisdom, their hard-earned wisdom. And the thing that I always say is, that's not really where the gold is. The gold is to listen first. And when you listen, by the way, people's nervous systems downregulate. They calm down. When you understand somebody, you can almost see them relax. And when somebody relaxes, they're then more open to the information that you have. The defense has been lowered. I was thinking about this because this was practiced so well in our most recent intensive that I ran. That's where we run something in Utah where we have people, seven people come together for a 4.5-day experience focusing on psychodrama, education, group work, group therapy, and family of origin, right? And in this last intensive, what I saw happen so well is people listened. There were times, literally, where someone was allowed to share for a straight hour. And the rest of the group just held space. One of the participants talked about their own nervousness about coming to the program and that they wouldn't be accepted. Of course, that makes sense, right? That's what happens with all of us. We are sure that if we show up as we are, that people are going to not be comfortable with it. And here's the insidious part of it. The insidious part of it is that when people are responding, they call it being helpful. But the most beautiful thing that happened at this last intensive is people resisted the urge to be quote-unquote helpful. And by doing that, they were just what everybody needed. They just listened. And so learn to listen. I can't overstate it. Learn to listen to your children. Learn to listen to others. You know, when I run groups, sometimes we run support groups, sometimes I run process groups. It happens all the time where somebody will be sharing and they'll be going on a little bit longer than maybe is expected, a little bit longer than maybe even the format might suggest or allow for. And I'll see everybody in the group, all of the clients or participants in the group, turning their heads to look at me. And I know what they're doing. They're saying, are you going to say something? You know, are you gonna allow this person to keep going? And I joke and I say, well, if there's a spouse present, they'll take care of it, because they usually do. But oftentimes my response is, and by doing nothing, is that's what therapy is. I just need to listen. And usually conclude, I cannot tell you. There's a magic formula. And I want to mean it. I want it to be real. But there's a magic formula when somebody shares to me something very stressful, difficult, painful, scary, whether it's in therapy, a support group, at an intensive. Oftentimes, my mind starts to spin when they're sharing because I'm thinking, oh, I got to fix this. I got to provide something helpful. And then I remember 23 years of therapy with my therapist, 22 years of therapy with my therapist, and I remember to say, thank you for talking about it. I'm glad you're talking about it. It's really important that you get this out. And that's magic, folks. So even when we're not in a pandemic, this principle still applies. Listen. And when in doubt, listen. Ask questions to your children, right? Remaining curious. I used to have a therapist that worked for us, and she would say all the time, I'm constantly asking parents that I work with to remain curious with their children. But ask questions about how they're doing. And it's okay to not have all the answers, right? I know we think, most adults think we have to have the answers. Most parents think that we have to have the answers, and we don't. In fact, it can be reassuring sometimes when we don't have the answers, because then the other person doesn't feel so alone in their confusion, in their dilemma. It's not that the children need answers. They just need you to have some anchor of security, some capability to do what psychotherapists call contain them, right? Hold space for them. The idea is that you take in the child's feelings and experience. You take it in, you metabolize it, and then you reflect back a sense to the child that they're okay. And when we can't do that, when we reflect back anxiety, frustration, and anger, right, the child has the experience that something's wrong with them. And I'm not saying we're not all going to feel that. Sometimes we are. But I'm talking about the ideal. We can let our feelings inform us. That's okay, right? We can make mistakes and kind of leak onto our children and apologize later. All of that's okay. But the fundamental project is to be responsible as a parent for your own serenity and to be able to metabolize a child's feelings and then set boundaries in such a way that you feel safe and that gives them a sense of stability and safety. I'll get to questions and comments a little bit later. Get in touch with your feelings and talk to somebody about the intense feelings you may be having, right? I know it's probably a tough time to find a therapist. That's why we're doing this tonight. We're doing this tomorrow at 1 p.m. Mountain Time and on Friday at 11 a.m. Mountain Time, okay? We're going to be doing this quite a bit in the near future. And then we've also added some other things that I'll announce to you as we end tonight for our current and alumni families of both of our programs, our Wilderness Program and our Intensive Program. But having said that, find some sources, find some people to talk to. And, you know, it's important that you find somebody who can contain you. It doesn't mean that they are free of the stress themselves. I'm not free of the stress myself, not by any means. But I can be there for other people. It's part of my training, my practice. I can be there and listen to it, understand it, even empathize. Be mindful of your conversations on the phone with other adults and with your children or in front of your children. Like I said, some of the jokes that were coming to mind after I woke up to an earthquake this morning in Salt Lake City, Utah, some end of the world jokes were definitely on my mind, right? And I've shared the jokes with some of my friends, some of the phone calls I've had today, and with my wife, with my adult children, right? Find your feelings, express them to somebody who can contain it, and be mindful of even young children are listening. They're listening for words like fear, anxiety, right? They're listening for that. Be mindful of the news broadcasting that is in your home. You know, it's not just the news about the pandemic. That's part of it to be mindful of. But it's also the rhetoric around it. If you are a political junkie, you might have to curtail or be mindful of that. But at least remember that some of the rhetoric that's being broadcast about around the airwaves, the news can be stressful, right? It's very scary for children when they see adults who are supposed to be in charge of things, taking care of things, angry and blaming and lashing out at each other. like I shared with you, my son's assertive request this morning, and I was glad he could say it. And I probably wouldn't have been as mindful of just the teasing, because it was an outlet for me, right? Going back to that idea that we're all experiencing stress, so I can't be there the same way for you that you might be for me. The stress of talking about the end of the world, the jokes, excuse me, of talking about the end of the world, were kind of a relief for me, a release for me, but they weren't for him. And luckily, he said it first thing, assertively, but consider that. Consider it. And then finding playtime, even finding some meditation time with your children, teaching them meditation, downloading an app, you know, relaxing them, having them lay down and kind of scratch their head slowly, and teaching them to pay attention to their breath, to relax their body. All of that helps reduce and reset the nervous system. I put this up here for questions now because I'm going to go to take-homes after questions. So, and I'm going to go to live questions after that too. So somebody submitted a question. Our son seems to be danger-seeking in this time of being cooped up. In wilderness, they were outside and somewhat free. Now he's in a transitional program, and they all have to be restricted because of CDC mandates. His reaction is to look to go on hikes that are dangerous or risky. It makes sense, right? It's probably an expression. I'm trying not to touch my face, and I keep doing it. It's probably an expression of anxiety, right? He's going to run at it instead of away from it because the idea of sitting and doing nothing when there's a threat out there runs counterintuitive to our brain wiring, especially for young people. So it makes sense that he'd be risky. And so gently setting boundaries, but also possibly asking questions and trying to understand. I talk about this during times of non-pandemic. You know, part of our job as therapists, for sure, but as parents, is to try to develop hypotheses about why our children might be doing this. And not hypotheses that make them bad or wrong, but hypotheses that where it makes sense. And maybe even offer those ideas up to them or ask questions about it. Or at least those hypotheses can give us some patience, right? We'll be less reactive if we understand. I talk about this in both the books, that when we get frustrated or angry with another, we've lost contact with them, because if we really understood what was going on, we would have compassion. Right? It's that quote I love from Henry Wadsworth Longfellow, where he says, "If we could read the secret history of our enemies, we would find in every man's story suffering sufficient to disarm all hostility." If we can understand people, it would breed compassion. So try to find one way or another some understanding. Someone else says, setting the current health threat aside, what if the fear our child is experiencing is based on a wildly false assumptions? At what point do you acknowledge the feelings and experience of their fear, but also help them understand realities which could minimize the adverse emotional effects their fear is having on them? Great question. I'm going to tell you a story that I think illustrates it well. I was in the wilderness last year sometime, visiting a group, and there was a young man who was telling his story for the first time, and he had so much rage for a parent. So much rage. I won't get into any details, but he expressed the fantasy of killing this person if he saw them, this family member. And that's a pretty powerful response. So after sharing his initial story, and in this story was this rage that he felt for this person, I asked the group if they could relate, if anybody could relate. And a staff member started giving a story. And there was a moral to the story about where, for the first time, he realized somebody he was holding a lot of hate for was really hurting him, and he had to let it go. And the second staff started in on a similar type of story. And I said, no, I'm not asking for solutions right now. I'm asking for, can you relate? And I asked it 3 or 4 times and people didn't even understand what I was saying. So I said, it sounds like this. It sounds like I get it. I've had so much anger, so much hurt at somebody before that I fantasized about hurting them. I get it. After that, then everybody started relating. And you could see this boy's shoulders relax, right? You could see him, his nervous system down-regulating. After the group, the staff pulled me aside and said, when is the time for teaching? And one of the staff specifically said to me, you know, he said, if two children were abused by somebody and they told each other, that wouldn't make any difference. And I said, first of all, it absolutely would make a difference. It wouldn't take away all of the trauma and all of the pain. But if somebody's a witness to your story and hears it and validates it, it is very different. It's one of the reasons why this social distancing is so difficult for us, because one of the ways that we work through our pain is through connection, right? We connect through our pain. So I said, first of all, you're wrong about the fact that it wouldn't make a difference. But second of all, when is the time to teach? I know one thing, I told him. I know one thing. The time to teach him is not the first time that he tells his traumatic story of his childhood to a group of strangers and staff, virtual strangers. He had been in the group for 5 or 6 days. I know that's not the time. So the answer is later. You know, when, whatever they're wildly making up, whatever the threat is, you know, our dreams. Think about the story that he's telling you like a dream. When you wake up in the morning, unless you're very disciplined and very enlightening, some of your dreams can be very confusing, right? They don't make any sense consciously, because our unconscious disguises them for us because we're not ready to integrate the ideas, right? They disguise them in symbols and characters and situations, so they don't make sense to our conscious mind. But they're the absolute truth. If you had a dream last night that you were flapping your arms and flying, and then got swallowed by a giant duck, if that was your dream, not to be too silly, but if that was your dream, it's the truth. Something in your life is happening like that. And therapy and work can kind of uncover what that story is trying to tell you. So my answer about the wildly, you can hold boundaries, by the way. Understanding and compassion has nothing to do with the boundaries you hold. And that gets confusing for people, I think, a lot also, is you can empathize, understand, be compassionate and listening, and you can also have very, very clear boundaries. Just because you're compassionate and understanding doesn't mean you have to compromise your boundaries. So let's get that clear first and foremost. Secondly, back to the question, spend some time trying to discover what story he's trying to tell you. Lies from children, exaggerations from children are still the truth at some level. They're trying to tell a story. Now, it might be very, very well disguised, but it is the real self trying to tell a story. So hold your boundaries. Hold your boundaries. Learn to listen. If you have to take a time out because it's infuriating, just like I talked about earlier tonight on the broadcast, take a time out, walk away. You're allowed to say, I can't hear this anymore. You're allowed to be you. Right? That's the whole premise of my new book, The Audacity to Be You, is you get to be you. You get to have your limits. But if you want to work on the project of helping to unravel this, learn to listen to what he's trying to say. And that's what our program can help with. That's what going to a therapist can help with. A good therapist can help you say, you know what? I think what he's trying to tell you is this, or I think the dilemma is this. It's kind of like dream interpretation, right? So I hope that helps. Another person says, thank you for the reminders that we will regress under stress. I am noticing my inner mama bear wants to bring the cubs into the den, but my cubs are young adults, and what they want is someone who will listen and try not to fix. It's beautiful. If we can resist resist the urge to fix and resist the urge to solve it and learn to listen. And that is a practice and an art, right? It's why therapy is invisible when you're watching it if you're not trained in it, because it looks like nothing is happening. But you're giving somebody the space to be themselves. Right? So that's the magic. That's the gold of the deep work. So some take-home ideas, and then I'll take more questions and comments. Try to find containers other than our children. If you don't have a practice, you might have to start some new practices to make it through this. When things are different, we have to do something different. I know it was working for you last week and the week before not to have a therapist, not to practice daily meditation. It was working 2, 3, 4 weeks ago, just fine. It might not work now. I know the time on social media or the news was working for you well enough 2 weeks ago. It might not work the same now. I talked about the lessons from grief counseling. It's going to be hard. It's especially particularly challenging when everybody around you is experiencing the same pain and loss, similar pain and loss. So that's why we're doing this, is to provide you all. There's a lot of people on here tonight, and some of them aren't even clients of the program, I suspect, or parents of the program, but something that I can do that gives me a sense of purpose and meaning. With children, work on games, fun, activities. You know, take it as an opportunity to do something creative with them. It's a great challenge right now because some children are home and parents aren't usually home. So it's just going to be some overwhelming challenges for a while. It really is for all of us. And this is something that we can't control. And a lot of us are pretty good at controlling things. So this is going to be kind of a fundamental existential challenge for us. What do we do when we're confronted with something outside of our control? And we're going to have to shift inward like I talked about. All right, I have a new announcement, so don't hang up on me, but I'll take live questions at the end. Our in-person parent support groups that we hold around the country are temporarily postponed or to be determined. We are starting, this was going to happen before coronavirus happens, we are starting virtual parent support groups. We initially thought of them to do them before with people that couldn't travel to our programs, but then we realized even if the support group is in your city, you still might not be able to get to it. So we've already put 6 on the schedule. And these are for intensive alumni and for wilderness therapy current and alumni parents. These are not anonymous. When you sign up and you'll get a Zoom invitation, there'll be 12 of us and you will be on screen. We did set up one for Los Angeles also. So because we were going to be in Los Angeles on April 5th. And so we're going to hold one at the same time virtually. So if you're in Los Angeles, please don't sign up for one of the other ones. Just sign up for the one in Los Angeles on April 5th, unless you can't make it, then you can sign up for something. But we're going to set up a Southern California one. We're also going to be doing a New York one because that's on the calendar, but it's looking like the way that the curve is happening with this pandemic that we might have to reschedule that. So we'll be setting up more of those. You'll get invitations. If you want more information on these, contact Keisha at evoketherapy.com for more information. I didn't put the .com on there. But Keisha is spelled K-A-Y-S-H-A. K-A-Y-S-H-A. Keisha at evoketherapy.com for more information or to RSVP. We still have the May 2nd and 3rd parent workshop for all current parents. We'll see how that plays out. We're going to keep finding yous on the calendar. We're going to keep them about 30 days out. So we haven't canceled the April 22nd one, and there's a couple of spots left. We might have to postpone it for everybody. May 27th is listed on the calendar. So these are our intensive programs where you come together, like I said, with 7 people. England has been postponed. Finding You 2 in July, we have one that's full, so we're opening up a second one. If you want to come to a Finding You 2, if you've been to one, and I suspect that will fill up quite quickly because the first one did, July 8th through 12th is our new date. If you want to learn more about our intensives, contact intensives at evoketherapy.com. Pursuit trips or outdoor trips around the world for young adults and families. We ask people to attend 12-step support groups as a part of the program here. We believe in that. Most groups are going virtual or are suspended right now, but you can go to alanon.org, coda.org, or familiesanonymous.org for more information or for schedules. Adultchildren.org is a place to go to if you grew up in an alcoholic family or a toxic family. Great support groups. And these will be back up and running sometimes, and this is also the podcast, so people will be listening to this, so that's where you go. RefugeRecovery.org is a Buddhist-inspired recovery program. Not so much an emphasis on a higher power. Some people prefer that. And the National Alliance on Mental Illness, NAMI.org, you can go to get free classes and resources in your area. On the podcast, search Finding You and Evoke Therapy Program and Evoke Therapy Podcast. I need to change this slide. You can find us on any of your podcast apps, any of your favorite podcast app. On your computer, you can go to SoundCloud.com to find all of our podcasts. Just search Finding You and Evoke Therapy Podcast. On Twitter and Instagram, you can find at Evoke Therapy. On Twitter and Instagram, you can find at Evoke Therapy Intensives. On Instagram, you can find Evoke Therapy Programs on Facebook and the Evoke Family Foundation on Facebook. Also, you can go to our blog for upcoming content, new content. My books, The Journey of the Heroic Parent and The Audacity to Be You, are available on Amazon. During the social distancing, I have lowered them as far as Amazon has some minimums that it will allow you to lower a book to. So I've lowered them as low as I can, as low as Amazon will let me lower them to. So the Kindle version of The Audacity to Be You is only $2.99, and the print version is $10.02. So, and then The Journey of the Heroic Parent's a little bit more. It's $12.95, but it's lowered as much as we can. Thank you for joining us tonight. We're going to be having open forums. This is all question and answer. They might last 5 minutes. They might last a full hour. But I'm going to be doing another one of these tomorrow at 1 p.m. Mountain Time. So look for the invitation or email Kaysha, K-A-Y-S-H-A, at evoketherapy.com for information. And then on Friday, this Friday, March 20th at 11 a.m. Mountain Time. So I'll be hosting open discussions, question and answer, sharing your thoughts and feelings, insights, concerns. We'll be hosting those this week, so feel free to join us. Looks like I have no other questions or comments from anyone here, so thank you for joining us. I see all of you on here. I see your names. I know a lot of you. I hope this is a helpful point of contact, a resource. All of these broadcasts get turned over to the podcast app the next morning, so this will be available tomorrow, as all of them will. So thanks for joining us. And somebody says, thank you, Brad. I'm really enjoying these. You're welcome. I'm enjoying it too, and I didn't even cry tonight like I did last night. Several people are saying thank you. You're welcome. I really feel I might start to cry now if I talk about this. We're all in this together, right? This whole thing. We're all here, and all we have is each other to get through some of this stuff. So I hope you all can be safe. You're welcome. I hope you all can be safe and find some peace in difficult and trying times. Take care, and I'll talk to you tomorrow. Bye-bye.